Welcome to On the Edge with April Mahoney Brains. Here, this is the spot where the conversation is pointed, the guests are sharp, and the responses are never dull. Welcome home, brains. There's only one requirement to hang out on the edge, is that you open your big brain and close your small mind. Did you bring your thinking caps? It's time to put them on, because the conversation starts now.
Hello, brains, and welcome back to On the Edge with April Mahoney, your home of homes, the place where the conversation is pointed, the guests are sharp, and the responses are never done. So, brains, I have a very interesting guest today. I always find you the deepest people. You know, and there's a lot of people that work with you that want you to work from outside influences. Well, my guest today, Rosemary Bennett from South Australia, wants you to work from the inside out. Let me make sure I got this right. She calls herself a psychotomist. Did I say that correctly?
Yes, a psychotomist.
A psychotomist. We're going to find out what that means, what this modality is, how it works, because I've never heard of it before. So I'm going to learn right along with you. She is brilliant. She is bright. She's wonderful. We have some great friends in common, other big brain thinkers, and I'd like to welcome her to On the Edge. How are you, Rosemary?
I am fabulous. Thank you, April. Absolutely. Here in South Australia, we've just had the most beautiful shower of rain.
I bet there's a beautiful rainbow outside too.
Yes, we get some gorgeous rainbows here and double ones as well.
I know. And the beaches there are, you have so many beaches there in Australia.
We do. We have a beach actually on Kangaroo Island that is one of the top 10 in the world.
Wow. Wow. Mm-hmm. Wow. Wow. So you are, I'm sure, one of the top 10 in the world. Explain to my brains exactly what is a psychotomist and how does it work and what do we need to do?
Okay. So when we look at psychotomy, psychotomy is part of psychology. Now, psychotomy is the laws of the mind related to an organism, which is ourselves, our internal and external environment. So what I do is I take people on a journey that allows them to see themselves from a different perspective. So I actually help them shift their consciousness and awareness from outside of themselves to inside of themselves. And I use actually quite a number of different ways to do that. Mm. I align their numerology, their as part of their astrology, their north nodes, the physical way they were birthed, the way they were born, and also use a form of energy healing, which is called body talk. So the process I take them through is numerous different parts. And as I show them themselves from all of these different angles, it all aligns. It actually usually shows up in each of those areas the same things. And then there's no, they can see themselves from those different avenues. And so they literally in the chair shift their consciousness. And I quite often can actually see it. So they'll become lighter. They'll be heavy when they come in with problems that they have, relationship issues. But I ask them when they leave, you know, how do you feel? Heavier than when you came in or lighter? And they feel lighter. And this lightness is them shifting their vibration, their frequency to a higher state.
Mm. Wow. Now, how did you become so gifted to be able to tap into this and create this?
Okay, so back in 2001, I think it was, I did a course which was called Holistic Psychology, which is esoteric psychology. And actually the word psychology means study of the soul. So what I actually did was I studied the soul. So I'm a trained rebirther and breath worker. And so most of my education is esoteric. And so esoteric means the unseen. So I come from what people don't normally see. I've studied body talk, and I've done numerous courses. I've even done a bit of art therapy and transpersonal counseling. So I'm a counselor, but I'm also a psychologist. Then body talk came along. So literally it has evolved.
Okay. So, all right. So kind of slow down, because some of my brains are not hip to some of these things. And I thought I knew everything until I talked to you, and I don't know everything. I want to hear a little bit more about breath work and body talk. What are they?
All right. So breath work is where we take someone into a breathing technique, which is a continuous breathing technique that takes them into an altered state, and we become the guide and they become the leader to, and they will revisit parts of their life that have caused blockages, et cetera, and they will, it will be relieved. Or they can go back to their birth. And literally we can retake them through the process of their birth so that the patterns in their birth are let go of.
All right, let's stop here, because I'm going through an emotional trauma right now. My mother's in hospice, you know. So, yeah, I said it, brains. It's hard for me to verbalize it. But a very wise man, Dr. Cornel West, told me one time, he says, you know, the world can be a cruel place, because when you're born, you come through this canal, a place between urination and defecation, and a puddle of blood and mucus, and you're forced out. He said, but on the other side, there's somebody to receive you with light and warmth and cheer you on and raise you and feed you and nurture you. He says, so when it's time to sleep, know that there's someone to see you on the other side, to catch you in that light and welcome you. And that was so amazing. So I say that to say this: number one, to self-disclose, because it's helping me heal. Number two, to understand the breath work. And number three, one of your colleagues there, I went on a meditation with her. And the meditations that I had been on previously were slow, you know, catch your breath and be in the moment. But hers started very rapid and very, very fast pace. And it seemed like it did transport me into another place. So breath work can be very effective and affect you in different ways if you start out slow, or you do it fast, or you do it syncopated. You know, and I didn't think about that. I really didn't. That's why I'm smart people like you.
Well, what I find now is, that process of this very, there's a lot of breath workers in the world. But what I've found is, when you ask me also about body talk, is body talk, I can take someone back to their fetal experience or their birth experience, and without them having to go through the process of releasing through the breath, they can literally lie on the table and we can tap it out. So the body is innate. The body will tell us what's up. The body will tell us what the problem is or what the issue is. And it is wanting to always come back to homeostasis. It's wanting to come back, you know, healthy. So body talk is can literally move things out of the body on a physical level, on an emotional level, on a mental level, and on a spiritual level. So it's energetic work.
I am sorry to interject, but I wanted to see how that all correlated with the soul.
Yeah.
Because we talk about the physical, but the soul is the metaphysical.
Yeah, well, the soul actually, if we are open, if we are evolving ourselves, the soul can control our outer form and our life. And that is the idea, that we balance our physical, our emotional, and our mental bodies. We have these three bodies. I remember when we first talked, I took you through a little process so that you could see that you're not those things. You're not your physical body, you're not your emotional body, and you're not your mental body. And so with the realization that we're way more than that, it's what we are, we are able to literally shift what's happening in those bodies and balance them. And by balancing them, that allows us to get to allows us to be able to contact our soul. Wow. So we are a spiritual being in a physical body, but we've been put into this limited mental, emotional, and physical bodies so that we grow ourselves kind of out of the body, if that makes sense. Because, you know, truly, we actually don't need a body. But, you know, well, the process of our evolution is that we do our learning in the body. The body is how we do our learning. The more we see ourselves in our bodies, the more we release ourselves from this mundane plane and the things that affect us on this mundane plane, which are generally outside of us.
So what is the purpose of life?
To love. The purpose of life is to love ourselves first, because unless we love ourselves, we can't love anyone else. And that's about a bit, you know, if I said to you, what's the hardest thing to do? It's to love yourself.
Yeah. Oh, no, I love myself. I adore myself.
Good.
But I have struggled with unconditional love.
Correct. So that's the ability to be able to accept ourselves exactly where we are, exactly with what we're doing, and exactly how we're being. And most people find that really challenging and generally blame something outside of themselves for the way that they feel. So people kind of think that, you know, the cause is outside of themselves and the effect is in here. But I actually don't agree with that. I think the cause is in here and the effect then is back in here, because we are at cause and effect of ourselves. The outside world is just a mirror, a reflection of what we think and how we feel and how we are within ourselves. It's purely a mirror. So the gift is the external environment showing us what we either like. So as an example, if we have an issue with someone and we don't like something about them, generally what we don't like about them is what we do to ourselves.
Right, right.
So if we have someone who's criticizing us, it's usually because our inner critic is really strong and our inner critic is saying negative, you know, that little voice in our head is saying negative things. If someone is bullying us, it's because, again, we bully ourselves with our thoughts. So our external world is the gift of showing us what we need to look at within ourselves. And our parents are our greatest gift, because they are unconsciously reflecting back at us what we need to learn about ourselves.
Well, I may agree and disagree with you on that, because the big topic that has been coming up, and Brains, you will be hearing a lot more about that, is intergenerational trauma. Mm. This trauma that has come down from, I mean, you know, we look at African Americans from slavery.
Yes.
And there has never been people that have really kind of pumped the brakes on that. There's a lot of people that are not bold enough. And I say bold because this is not for chumps, to work with you, to look at that internal critic, and to do the work in an external world. It seems like you're fighting against the devil, invisible enemy, like the coronavirus. You can't see it. And everything that you do is external. So how do you embrace this, you know, this gift that you find within yourself with a limited amount of people that understand who you are and help you propel?
So what happens is when we shift our inner beliefs, when we shift ourselves of what we believe about ourselves in here and who we know ourselves to be, then the mirroring stops. The external environment will only give us a reflection. So when we are in a space of calm and love and peace, then the external world will show us that as well. Could you imagine a world, April, where everybody, if that what I just said was so, if we had a world where everybody loved themselves, which meant the duality would not need to be there, love would be reflected back at us. It would be, that's how it works. It's like our learning comes from within and then it is shown to us from without. And as soon as we change within, and I have so many clients that this happens to. I work a lot with relationships, and like they have bad relationships with a parent or parents, their partner, and children with their parents, very common. But when I do what I do with them, and when I get them to see within themselves and their own patterning, and they let that go, the external world, the person out there, stops mirroring them, their lesson, because they've learned it. So if you look at that in through humanity, if humanity was loving themselves, the reflection would be the same. The reflection would be love. And that's, yeah.
All right, two things.
Yes.
Firstly, you're working with young people.
Yes.
Lives are ever evolving. I mean, my life is still ever evolving.
Correct, yes.
Things are changing. Things are coming in and out. There's different types of influences. There's world travel. There's conversations. There's relationships. Their own personal relationships. There's adolescence. How do you work with, you know, for the lack of a better term, a body that's unstable? I could see, you know, a more mature person, 30, 40, with some life experiences, something to reflect upon.
Yes.
Where they are able to make that corrective action because they've seen their challenges. They know where they want to ascend to. But mm-hmm. how do you work with a child that hasn't had that experience?
Well, it's really interesting, April, because children are actually easier to work with because they don't have the baggage. They don't have as many beliefs in the world and beliefs, negative beliefs in the world. They don't have the baggage of relationships, except their parental one and their friends at school, et cetera. So they're actually easier to work with. They flip quicker, they get it faster, and it shifts their life for the rest of their life. So actually, I love working with teenagers and young people because they shift it really quick. It's the fact that we, as we grow older, we have more relationships and our relationships will continue to reflect back at us our lessons, because if we don't learn them with mum and dad, whoever we're with will eventually project the lessons at us. So our lessons don't go away. But if I can catch someone at a younger age, it's much easier to move, like to get them to shift to a conscious, aware, inner place, and because they don't have the baggage. The older the person, actually the harder it is for them to see themselves from an inner plane, because the belief system, the negative belief system, is so strong.
Okay.
Yeah.
Second thing, you know, I've been doing the work. I have do the meditation, the relaxation, the self-care, the neuro-linguistic programming, the tapping.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I still feel like shit. I'm just giving it to you 100%.
Maybe you need a session with me.
maybe I do, you know, really, really seriously, because I can't get beyond what I'm feeling. And that's a human emotion. I have a right to feel the feels.
Yes.
You know, and I shouldn't have any expectation on the response to that feeling. I should just be free flowing and let it go.
Correct.
And open to whatever I see. Am I right?
Yes. But it's actually what I work with is the mental thought. So what we do is we have a thought generally, and then we attach an emotion to it. So if we have a negative thought, we will attach the appropriate, usually negative emotion to it. And then eventually that will manifest as disease in the body, because on a cellular level, quantum physics will actually tell us that all we are is energy. We're energy. It's been proved. Our cells will store our pain. They will store our negative thoughts and emotions, and eventually they make us sick. So it's like the mind is it. They actually talk about the universe is actually mental construction. So it's kind of like it's there, but it's not there. I mean, we are energy. We don't actually really exist from a scientific point of view. Mm-hmm. But what we go through is this process where we can learn about ourselves. So this ability to evolve ourselves is why we're here. And if you think about like the things that you just said about being able to express your emotions and be able to feel, it is very important to feel, because if we don't feel, what we do with those feelings is we lock them inside of our body. We put them in our diaphragm, which affects our breathing. And then once our diaphragm's full, they go to our liver, and our liver organizes them. So what you were talking about before, where, you know, your feelings, you're allowed to feel, that's part of it. But the issue is, if you become your feelings, then you're not separating yourself from the feeling and able to view your feeling to be able to work with that feeling. So our feelings
slow down, because I'm trying to take all this in. Okay. So I'm allowed to feel my feels.
Yes.
But
you need to observe them.
Okay.
You need to get into them and observe them. And when you observe them, what you'll be doing is you'll see what's the mental thought that's attached to them. Because as I said before, you can't have a thought without a feeling, and you can't have a feeling without a thought. And it's these two are attached together. But it's what they do. It's what they do to your cells. It's they literally, if you think of people who are very negative, they often become unwell. I mean, right. I have books where the literally each disease has the mind thoughts that create that disease. And when I work with someone, I will write down, they will tell me what their dis-ease is. They're not at ease, their dis-ease is. And I'll literally look it up in a book. I mean, I don't hold all of this in my head. And I will read it out to them. And 99.9 times out of 10, what I read to them, they say, yes, that's how I feel, and it's what I think. And so we, you know, by our thought process, It is what we attach our emotions to. And
this is where I get confused, is that, you know, the emotion is a part of the expression.
Yes.
And the thought is how you react to it. I get all that. Mm. Okay. But where I'm still at a loss is that I still go through the process. I still feel, I realize what this is. I can make a conscious choice on how I respond to that, mm-hmm. but I still feel like shit.
We've got to get you out of that place.
Yeah, you know, and again, you know, sometimes I think you just need to sit in that place.
Correct.
You know, yes. You don't have to get stuck, but you need to sit in that place so that you can understand and appreciate what is on the other side.
Yes. And, you know, if you have the knowledge of your patterns and what you're here to work on and the behaviors that don't work for you, and you actually see how you've come in, because it's like, you know, April, we choose the time we're born, we choose our birth is perfect, we choose it, we choose when we come in. I believe we choose our parents because they're perfect.
You know what? I'm sorry to interrupt that, but you have just validated. Someone else had an out-of-body experience. They died. They, you know, for 6 months they were in a coma.
Yeah.
And she said that she visited heaven, and that we pick our parents.
Yes, we pick everything. You said that. Wow. You see, what it is it's like, when it's our time to come back into, incarnate into a physical body again, we choose the lessons. It's like there's a big board, and we choose the lessons that we're up to be able to do. And we never choose anything we can't do. We all choose this one thing the same, which is to love ourselves. Then what we do is we set it up and we choose the perfect parents, and we'll even bring them together if they're not already together. We bring them together. We will choose the parents that are perfect to reflect back our lessons, and we will choose the siblings and we will choose when we come in. Are we the first sibling, the second sibling, the third sibling? We will choose where we come in. We will choose our name. We will choose exactly the time we're born and the way we're born. And all of those things are all related to setting up patterns so that we can then work through those patterns and come out the other side with the evolution, the growth, and the learning. Mm. Now, we're not here just to have a great time on the planet. Well, we are, because life is a game. It's just a game, and we're here to play it. We're an experiment. We're a spiritual experiment. That's what I say. We are this experiment. So you kind of got to get on the court and play the game. But when people have an awareness about how things are put together and what they've come in to learn, it frees them up to look and see themselves from an objective point of view. And they detach, they can become detached from the little voice in their head, They can become detached from their emotions. I'm not saying they won't have them, because that's the emotional body. But we're not our body. We're not our physical body because we have awareness of it. We are not our emotions because we know what we're feeling. We can't be the emotion. And because we have mental thoughts, we cannot be the thoughts. Because it's like if you say your name in your head, April, think your name.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Did you hear yourself think your name?
Yes.
So that means, you know, the question is, who's listening to you think?
Me, because I'm the thinker of my thoughts.
Yeah, but are you? Because you're the observer of your thoughts.
Ah.
You are actually the observer. Your life is like a movie, and you have the opportunity when conscious and aware to watch your thoughts, watch your emotions, and watch your physical body. The movie, you are the observer, and it's the observer who creates their life. And people don't like it when I say you've created everything in your life, but everything in your life is the opportunity for you to come back to it, to look inward and not transform. Transformation's finished. It's create. You are the creator of your life, and what do you want to create? But it's our beliefs. It's our need to be right, because we think we want to be right. It's a human trait.
You got to win and you got to be right, you know.
All right. Well, I can give you a little clue on that one. This is how it works. If you like to be right and you have a negative belief about yourself or others, then for you to be right, you must show up that way, and you will find evidence of that belief. Does that make sense? I'll say it again.
Say it again.
Yeah. So say, what's a negative belief you have about yourself?
A negative belief. You're just making me expose myself to my brain. A negative belief that I have, I'm a bit of a dictator. I like that characteristic.
All right.
I'm a bit of a dictator.
Okay, so the negative belief you have that you'd rather not be is you have a belief that you're a dictator. Mm-hmm. So for you to be right about your belief, you must show up as a dictator, and there will be evidence that you are dictating.
Right.
Now, it's the same in our relationships. So if we've got a relationship and we believe something negative about that person, then for us to be right, how we believe them to be, we create them because they must show up. For us to be right, they must show up the way that we believe about them, and we'll find evidence. And we will even set up a situation so that we can prove that they are what they are.
Right. Because I told you so.
That's right. I told you so. And we've got to be very careful, because when we point the finger at someone, we've got to notice that there's three fingers pointed back. So actually what we don't like in someone else is actually what we need to work on within ourselves. It's what we do to ourselves. And also everything that is we love about the other person, we too have those qualities, because we can't see in another person what we don't have going on within ourselves. And that's why two people or two children can see their parents differently. They don't believe the same, because we have all our own patterns and our own beliefs. And so our beliefs are our mental body, and it's the mental body that drives us into a place to attach negative emotion, and eventually that negative emotion will manifest as disease in the body. We create our own disease.
Okay.
I'm going to say something that people may not like, but I'm just going to say it anyway.
You know what? They like it. They tuned in. They like it. They love it.
Yeah. Okay. So all death is suicide, because how we live is how we die. Mm-hmm. If we create our life, then we create our death.
Right.
We create
you hit the nail on the head again, because I've been talking to some people that do grief recovery work.
Yep.
And, you know, exactly. If a person is, you know, fearful in life, they're going to be fearful of death. If they are excited, if they are optimistic, if they are adventurous, they are going to be more comfortable with the transition. They won't be as fearful. They'll be more optimistic about it.
Yeah.
You're going to say something, but I want to ask you about stress too.
Yes. Yep. Oh, well, what I was going to say was, it's not just the death process. It's actually the way that we live, the way that we think, and the way that we emote, the way that we feel, causes our death, causes our dis-ease. It causes the disease that we have. See, I see disease as an opportunity to heal. I see it as an opportunity for us to grow. So when we understand what's caused our dis-ease, then we can shift ourselves away from those ways of being and the feelings we have and the thought process we use to heal ourselves. Now, I know from in here, I know from the, when I work, how many people have not got the disease that they used to have. My own brother he lets me talk about it because obviously everything in his private, but he came to see me and he had something that was not looking good. And just by working with what I do, he shifted that. So I also say, how many people then don't get sick that might have if they hadn't been to see me? Because they shift their consciousness, which is not my job, it's their job.
Okay. So it's an inside job.
Yeah.
What about stress? Okay, because and I was thinking about this. You know, I was talking to Mr. Magnificent, my husband, and I was saying, baby, I'm doing everything not to be stressed. Mm-hmm. Again, the self-care, the walking, the meditating, the singing bowls, the tapping, the hypnotherapy, yada, yada, reading the book, all this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But there is still something inside of me that is churning.
Yes.
And it won't shut off. It won't shut off. And I don't know if I'm not allowing myself to totally feel what I feel. I'm not allowing myself to, because I don't want to just turn it off. I want to learn from the experience.
Yes.
Because I'm a quick study. You only got to tell me one time. And when you tell me, then you tell me, and I'm going to question you until I get it. And then once I get it, I got it.
Yeah.
But when it doesn't turn off, I'm still questioning. I'm still yearning for an answer. How do you work through processes like that?
Okay. So tell me, is the thing that is causing you the stress within you or outside of you? Where did it start?
It's outside of me.
Okay. So it's outside of you. So when it's outside of you, what it's trying to do is teach you something. And what we do is if we're unable let's look at the word detachment. So detachment is caring deeply from an objective point of view. And we learn detachment through loss. Now, detachment is about knowing that whenever something starts, it's the perfect time for it to start. Whoever shows up, is exactly who's meant to show up. Right. In other words, whatever experience is there, whatever happens during that process is exactly what is meant to happen. No more, no less. And when it ends, it ends. And so detachment is being able to see the experience as an experience rather than be that you are that experience. So when we come from a place of being able to listen to our thoughts and not be them and know that we have these emotions but be able to kind of see ourselves be emotional, then what we do is there's a level of detachment. You know, when we have, because you shared something with me earlier, when we have people who are passing away or death, and at the moment it's happening a lot in the world, but I also say, and this again might be hard for some people to hear, but I believe our death is in perfect timing with our evolution, and there is some disease that is meant to be healed. I ask you this: can you, if all we are is energy, and that energy for us to die, that energy can't be destroyed. So we, in a form of energy, continue on. We go back to source. We continue on. So for that energy to be retracted from you, can you retract your energy yourself and go back to source? The answer is no.
I'm kind of at a quandary. Ask me the question again.
Okay, so if all we are is energy and energy can't be destroyed, then there is a part of us that will go, that energy, the energy body that we are, will go back to source, go back to God, go back to whatever anyone wants to call it. So we never really die, but our physical body will. Now, Do you know how to retract? Because our energy is retracted via our seven chakras. That's, it comes in via our chakras, and a force works against it to hold us together, basically. So when it's our time to leave, if we don't know how to retract that energy to go back to source, then we have to get sick. We have to become diseased, usually, unless it's an accident, but most people end up with some form or forms of disease, and that disease is a disease that will take them off the planet because we don't know how esoterically to leave our body. Hi, Gurujis, people who are very evolved on the planet, they can. They don't have to get sick. They can just leave. But we, the average person, you, me, I don't know how to do that. So I will either be in an accident or I will get some form of disease. Now, when someone can view life from that place, they have a realization that we it is that close to our time to leave. It can be set up at least 5 years or more before we go. And what happens is the fact that we have to leave. We're not going to stay here forever and ever. And I don't want to. I don't want to be here in a 100-year-old body that can't move. I'd rather not be here. So the process of death comes via a disease or diseases that it, when it's our time, it takes us off the planet. Now, when I think about working, because I work with people who are either dying or, you know, have disease, but the realization that that disease is part of the process rather than the fighting of that disease. And when we have someone who's dying in our life, if we can see that process, that it's their process. I've lost both my mum and my dad, and all I did was I loved them through the process of how they chose to leave their body. And I didn't, as much as possible, I didn't interrupt that or try and stop it. If anything, I tried to speed it up. And people might say, why would you do that? But I didn't want them to suffer. So I will help them move off the planet in the most peaceful, loving way that I can.
Wow. You are.
Does that make sense?
It makes too much sense.
Yeah.
It takes me. Yeah. So you've written a book, because I could talk to you for hours.
I'm writing a book. Yeah.
Writing a book. What is going to be in the pages of the book? And are we going to need the audio version? Because this is deep, you know, just sit there and try to read this, you know, as a point of reference. Is, you know, it would be difficult because this is a process.
Yes. So the book is being written. It's almost finished. So obviously it has to be edited and go through that process. So the book is written in, most books are written in the you, your, with that. Now, owning our stuff is being able to say I, me, we, collective unconscious, being collective. And so the book is written in the way of ours. It's not written in the you, yours. And I don't know if there's any books written this way, but what I'm doing is I'm allowing people to own themselves and their stuff as they read the book. So, yes, things that I've talked about now will be in the book. There are some things I have not been given permission to put in the book and other things that I have. And then a lot of it is my own, what I've developed over the last however many years. So in the book is a process that takes them from the start and takes them through. And then near the end of the book is all of these little analogies, etc., that can be looked at and read separately. You know, they can open the book. If they're having a bad day, they can just open the book and go, oh, that just made me feel so much better. So the book is about how do you love yourself. It's about analogies of life. But it's this process of the steps to open someone up, to be able to see how we create our own life and own it, own our own life. Because no one can do the lessons that we chose. No one can do our life. Mm-hmm. So it's up to us. So it's like a kick up the pants to say, well, are we going to take ourselves on in our own life? And we have the ability to create our own life. It's up to us.
Wow. Okay, Rosemary, I'm going to ask you one question before we conclude, because this has been riveting. What do you say to people that, like, you know, Rosemary Bennett is off the chain. She is unleashed. What is she talking about? This is some different stuff. I don't want to call it crazy, because it's not crazy, because I get it.
You know,
I get it. I receive it, and I'm going to learn to process it. But what do you say to that person that's questioning it? Because this is some heavy duty, this is some heavy duty thought process. And I mean, you know, down in South Australia, you guys, I don't hear so much of the religious doctrine, you know, the Judaism or Christianity or Buddhism. I hear a lot of metaphysical energy, spiritual, but I also hear witch. I hear witchery and spirit, you know. Tell me a little bit about that.
Okay, so we're the third race on the planet. So there was the Atlantean race and the Lemurian race. And the Lemurian race was, Lemuria was out of Eastern Australia. And so the indigenous of Australia are actually one of the descendants from that Lemurian race. So we have a lot of culture. I mean, they tried to literally annihilate the indigenous here because they have so much. Yeah. So they have so much spiritual contact. And so we, you know, that Australia is a place that has this amazing connection to spirit. And, you know, I think it's a place which is developing that more and more, and people that are attracted here or incarnate here for that reason. And the other thing is we're on the opposite side of the world, and the other side of the world can't touch us in the same way that they do in the southern hemisphere, in the northern hemisphere. So being by ourselves, I think, is actually quite helpful. And we're a really old nation and we're a really young nation. And when we bring those two things together, it gives us the ability to tap into the new and to the old and the ancient. So I'm seeing that as the process of where Australia will go. Now, as far as when people say to me, you know, you're a nut, I say this, when someone comes to see me, I say, everything in this room is confidential. Take with you what works and just leave what doesn't. You don't have to believe anything I say. We are all at a different evolutionary level. And I don't ever presume to know where someone is, at what level they are. It's not my business. And I don't know. So I just allow people to take and absorb what works for them and leave what doesn't, because we all have that right. And if someone's not ready to hear something, they're not ready to hear it, and that's absolutely fine. Well, people will go into cognitive dissonance. You can tell them something and it can be right in front of them. They can read it and they just won't be able to take it in. And that's okay, because that's where they are. So if I'm saying to people, we're in exactly the right place at exactly the right time, doing exactly the right thing, then I can't force them into something that they're not ready for.
Right. Because if you try to force them into it, they won't receive it. They could reject it. It could do more harm than good.
Correct. Yes. Yeah. And I'm not for everybody. You know, there are people that I work with that, you know, I'm not for them. And that's why there's lots and lots of different therapists out there, and a person has to connect with a person that feels right for them.
Right. Well, like I said, you are there for me and my brains. I absolutely adore you. This has been so helpful and healing. It's given me a lot to think about. I'm going to go back and watch it at least 3 or 4 times, take some notes and send you some notes. How can my brain send you some notes, Rosemary? How can they get a deeper dive on this?
Can I just let also those that are listening to know that even though I'm here in South Australia, everything I do can be done online. Anyone can have a remote session from anywhere. Body talk is energetic work, can be done remotely. I do my sessions remotely, so people don't have to be here to receive a session.
Well, that's good to know.
It's good to know.
And so how do they get in contact with you?
So I have a website, The Psychonomist. I will spell that. It's psychonomist.com.au. So The Psychonomist, one word, .com.au. And they can go on there and have a little look at what I do. And I'm on Facebook as well, Rosemary Bennett, and I have a page on Facebook as well, which, of course, this podcast will be going on to.
Well, no, this podcast is going all over the planet. It will be on YouTube. Yeah. It will be on LinkedIn. It will be on Instagram. It will be on Facebook, and it will be played over and over and over again till you get it, brains.
Thank you.
I want you to get it, you know, and I know that it's a challenge. Okay. But we're talking about a shift, a mind shift.
Yes.
We are going through a spiritual warfare right here. We are going through a vortex. And yes. If COVID taught me nothing else, it taught me to be patient.
And love.
You know, I always had love. But again, like I said, I work on that as conditions on my love. So to try to, you know, be open to more things, I do that. But again, that comes with patience. Thank you so much, Rosemary. You are just a blessing. And Brains, if you didn't get it, you better try to work on it, because this is some good stuff. It's good stuff. Thank you so much. Come back and listen to other edgy conversations. All right. I adore you.